Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. In May, Americans commemorated the 60th anniversary of a landmark ruling in American history, Brown versus Board of Education. In 1954, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that racial segregation of children had no place in American schools. Brown opened the door for lawsuits demanding the integration of schools, mostly in the American South. But 9 years later, President Kennedy found himself having to use the National Guard to enforce that ruling.
Following a series of threats and defiant statements, the presence of Alabama National Guardsmen was required on the University of Alabama to carry out the final and unequivocal order of the United States District Court of the Northern District of Alabama. That order called for the admission of two clearly qualified young Alabama residents who happened to have been born Negro.
1 year later, the Civil Rights Act became law, and it paved the way for desegregation in places besides schools. At the time, though, Latinos were not considered a discriminated group like African Americans. That changed in 1972.
Petitioner's submission is that the Denver system has violated the constitutional rights of black and Hispano children to equal protection of the laws, and that the courts below should have required a more comprehensive plan to desegregate the schools and otherwise eliminate discrimination.
That's a clip of the oral argument session at the Supreme Court in Keyes versus School District 1. In that decision, the court said the Hispanics had the same desegregation rights as African Americans. The court found that Latinos, mostly Mexican Americans, in fact, had a long history of discrimination. Integration in American schools peaked in the 1980s, but numbers began to slip again after the Supreme Court issued new rulings that made it harder to claim racial segregation in schools.
The separation of cities and suburbs for desegregation purposes by the Supreme Court in 1974 was tragic. So was the Supreme Court's decision that there was no right to an equal education in the American Constitution in the Rodriguez case from San Antonio. So the Supreme Court has been a colossal failure in recognizing the need to address the Latino issues.
Gary Orfield is a researcher with the Civil Rights Project at UCLA. And what he has to say is borne out in the data. Most studies say children are now more divided by race, income, and housing than they were in the 1970s. There are now 5 times the number of Latinos in public schools, and that number may make you think there is more integration. But Latinos tend to concentrate in low-income areas with low-quality schools.
Most of the people are coming across the border from Mexico and Central America are poor and with an elementary education. They're coming into a society where the opportunities for people with that level of preparation are dismal.
Orfield says that now, 8 in 10 Latinos in the U.S. go to a school that is mostly Latino or black and poor.
If we went all out for integration, we couldn't do it all now because of the demography.
According to UCLA's Civil Rights Project, the states where Latinos are most segregated are California, Texas, and surprisingly, New York. Yes, in the Big Apple, Latino and black students are likely to go to so-called apartheid schools, where less than 10% of students are white.
New York is a place that has always had the conceit that it's liberal and progressive. They sent volunteers down to reform the South, but they don't realize they've been behind the South now for 40 years.
60 years after Brown, should Americans be worried about how segregated our schools are? Here's Latino USA's senior producer, AC Valdez.
It's 8 in the morning, and parents are dropping off their kids at PS 133. There's white, black, and Latino moms and dads crossing each other at the school door. There's Latinos that don't speak English.
Bueno, yo solo tengo 2 días trayéndolo. Entonces, no tengo experiencia como para decirte.
He's the uncle of one of the students. And white parents, like Kyle Krinka. He's glad his son comes here.
I have a daughter in another public school that is much more, I would say, segregated, but also a public school. And this PS 133 really stands out in the way that it really reflects, you know, the diversity you see around.
That's because PS 133 is an exception in the Big Apple. In New York City, Black and Latino students are very likely to go to schools that are also just Black and Latino. PS 133 is in Park Slope in Brooklyn. The neighborhood's been middle class for decades, but in the last 10 years, housing prices have skyrocketed. And some parents are having trouble with the change, like Dominican-American Robert, who was in too much of a rush to give us his last name.
And they kind of make you feel uncomfortable now, like as if you don't belong, like an elitist type thing going on.
No matter the differences, all parents agree that the principal at least listens to everyone.
My name is Heather Foster Mann, and I have been the principal of PS 133 for the last 7 years. This is my 8th year, actually.
The school was revamped as the neighborhood began to change. They got a new building at a new location. So the two school districts in the area began fighting over who would run PS 133. There was fear that the new affluent parents would completely take over the school. So the community, some parents, and the school's administrators fought back against the apparent takeover.
And it was really important to us that the school didn't all of a sudden change overnight. And so children who lived in lower socioeconomic housings, that they would have equal access to the school.
Ms. Fosterman and some parents negotiated with the city's Department of Education to let the school be a choice school for students in the two districts. They also negotiated an admissions target. At least 35% of school admissions would have to be reserved for low-income students and for English language learners.
I mean, this whole process took about 2 to 3 years just to really work out, you know, all the parts, all the moving parts. And, you know, we're the first school, I believe, in New York City that has embarked on such a monumental admissions policy.
The Parent-Teacher Association has become more diverse. The board is made up of 3 white and 2 African-American women. We met 3 of them in the hallway. They really like the school's diversity.
So I think it's the best. I think the school should reflect the diversity of the city.
That's Lorraine Letac, vice president of the PTA board. We asked them how integrated the school was. Kate Dotrich, another vice president, weighed in.
The kids are totally integrated, and I think for us, we often don't have contact with upper grades.
But Letac says they're doing something about it.
Yeah, I think that's the role of, I guess, the PTA to try to create some events and try, like, mixer for diversity.
Common project
that makes everybody get together.
Ahmed Dickerson, or Mr. D, is the parent coordinator. He's been at the school for almost 20 years now. He remembers what the school was like a few years ago.
I want to say it was 90% Hispanic families in our school, and, you know, 10% African-Americans and 1% of Caucasian in our school community.
Now the school has 161 Latino, 170 African-American, and 120 Caucasians. And demographics are not the only thing that changed.
When I first started here, we was very low in parents' involvement. My role is to try to get parents more involved. Today is a big turnout when it comes to parent involvement.
The new PTA now has a committee for pretty much everything. From fundraising to gardening, they've raised money for special arts and leadership programs, even a new website. And it's the new parents that started the dual language program, the school's most popular offering. Mr. Dickerson took us on a tour of the classes. We started with the lower grades.
So these are our two French classrooms. This is the English part, and this is the French part.
The classes are half English dominant and half French dominant children.
Can you sing for me the escargot song?
We noticed that most of the children here were white. Were things different in the Spanish language classrooms? No. Now, the kids here were pretty good at pronouncing the sounds of Spanish. But again, the classroom was mostly white. We went up the stairs in the building to see the upper levels where the 4th and 5th graders were.
And you guys are 5th grade class. Seniors. General ed, yes.
Here, the change was astonishing. The majority of students were Black and Latino. School administrators say they haven't been able to bring more Black and Latino families into the special language programs. The Department of Education now runs admissions to PS 133 and to the special programs. So it's hard for them to tell how many black and brown students are applying.
The problem that we're finding is that the targets only work as well as our ability to reach out to the community, and that there are parts of the community that are not fully engaged in, you know, being a part of the school in terms of us, you know, getting certain, you know, families into the door. But it's a strong commitment of the school to maintain that diversity.
That's Sarah Voisin. She's one of the parents that works with Mr. Dickerson doing outreach to the low-income communities. She says coming to the school is especially hard for low-income Latino and black families. Getting the kids to the school from far places in the two districts costs money and time for families that are already struggling. She says the city should be doing more, like providing busing to and from the school for low-income children and their parents.
So it's a great school, but how we negotiate those types of structural barriers are, those are our challenges.
We tried asking the city's Department of Education how they were helping the school reach its target, and what options are available to help schools like this one bring in low-income children and their parents. But we didn't receive a reply. So in September, PS 133 will have a new incoming class. It's only then they'll know if the diversity they're aiming for is here to stay, or if it's just a brief stop on the way to good old New York City segregation. For Latino USA, I'm senior producer A.C. Valdez. Thanks to producer Camilo Vargas for his reporting on this piece.
Coming up on Latino USA...
After the Minnesota Dream Act passed, my mom, she's been able to come home at 4, and she's been able to have dinner with us.
What in-state tuition looks like in real life to undocumented students. Stay with us, no se vayan, on our report card show. Dijo que yo era retrasado. Mi mamá se lo creyó, pobre casi se murió, menos mal estaba equivocado. Luego fui creciendo, me puse inteligente en el colegio, estaba un año adelantado. No había más que hacer que estar ahí sentado. Qué fácil era antes llegar volando hasta el planeta Marte, atravesando el cielo en una nave dibujada. Si no te despertaste después de que vinieron a avisarte.